Hello, listeners. Welcome back to Wiltopia Capsule with Omar the Pharmacist, where we discuss everything and anything related to the pharmacy. Please note that this podcast is for informational use only, and the information provided is not meant to offer medical advice or diagnose or treat any health condition, and this podcast is not supervised or approved by the FDA. Today, we have a podcast about bridging the conventional and holistic psychiatry, a conversation with Dr. Aruna Tumala. It's a special treat because Dr. Aruna, she is board certified in psychiatry, and she's also a holistic and functional medicine psychiatrist and founder of Trinergy Health in New Berlin. Beyond conventional psychiatry, Dr. Tumala is trained in integrative and holistic medicine, functional medicine, and ancient practice of Ayurveda. I hope I'm saying it correctly. Dr. Aruna is passionate about addressing the root causes of mental illnesses. She combines modern and traditional methods from dietary changes and yoga to psychotherapy and limited psychiatric medications. So she still uses medications, but limited psychiatric medications, aiming for overall mental well-being with a rich educational background, including her MD from NIMHANS in Bangalore, India, and affiliations with the Medical College of Wisconsin affiliated hospitals. She is also a respected voice in integrative psychiatry. And Dr. Aruna is also board member at large for the AAIDD organization, or American Association on Intellectual and Developmental Disabilities, a Wisconsin chapter. So, Dr. Aruna, how are you doing today?
Very well. Thank you, Omar. It is my absolute pleasure to be here. And to I am always looking for opportunities to share the truth about health and wellness. So thank you for having me on.
Thank you, Dr. Aruna. Dr. Aruna, can you share with us how you first became interested in Ayurveda, especially given your rigorous background in conventional psychiatry?
I will. But actually, before I do that, I just have, thank you for the thorough introduction. Sure. There is just one clarification I want to make. I did have an affiliation with the Medical College of Wisconsin, but when I started my practice and people in the mainstream at the medical college, when they got to know that I was critical about mainstream psychiatry practice and the indiscriminate use of medications and that I was doing things differently, I was asked to leave, or rather they fired me, which I wow. take it as a feather in my cap. I take it as an accolade. I mean, I must be doing something right to piss off a lot of people.
Insulted so many people by doing what you're doing.
Yeah, which is, yes. But to answer your question, so I was, I grew up in India, and Ayurvedic medicine is the oldest medical tradition in the world. Right alongside Chinese medicine. At least it's a recorded, we have textbooks of Ayurveda dating back to 3000, 4000 BC. And, but when I grew up, I was born in the 70s. And when I was growing up, we still had a lot of that colonial mentality because we were occupied by the British, who completely decimated everything that was indigenous to Indian thinking and culture. And they actually destroyed many libraries of Ayurvedic medicine. They set fire to a very, very big library in Calcutta in the 1800s, So a lot of those kinds of things happened. And Ayurvedic doctors would be persecuted. And, so during the British colonial rule, Ayurveda was able to flourish only in independent small kingdoms. So Kerala, the state of Kerala, which is in the southernmost part of India, that kingdom never seceded to British rule. They had some kind of an alliance. So Ayurveda flourished in his kingdom. In the kingdom of Kerala. So in pockets of India, it flourished. But after the British left, one of the really wonderful things that the Indian government did was to revive indigenous practices, thinking, culture, everything. And they created a department of indigenous medicine, and Ayurveda was given its attention Ayurvedic medical colleges were started in the 1950s, and they were trying to modernize all of that. But for me, growing up in the 70s, 80s, and when I joined med school in 1993, I still was made to believe by the larger culture that Ayurvedic medicine is grandma's tales, there's no science, you know, only modern medicine is the science. So I chose Western medical tradition. And then I fell in love with psychiatry. So I did, I got my MD in NIMHANS. But the thing is, even though we were trained in Western psychiatric textbooks, like, you know, DSM and ICD-10 and Kaplan and Sadok, we were trained in the same textbooks, but the implementation was very, very different in India as compared to here. What I mean by that is that the average stay in the inpatient hospital for a patient was 4 weeks, minimum 4 weeks. We did not jump up to put them on medications. We admitted a family member, at least one family member along with the patient. And especially in the child unit, the wow. child beds were actually small apartments with a bed space, bedroom area, small kitchenette, and a bathroom. And children definitely were not put on medications right on day one. We would observe the family dynamics. We would observe the symptoms literally over a week's time. And then very thoughtfully, and the use of medications was very minimal. The food that was given to these patients was not processed. Here, any hospital you go, you see these big trucks with processed food delivering their stuff. Their food was actually prepared in the kitchens. Wow. And so there were a lot of these differences. Polypharmacy was completely not, polypharmacy was seen as as something very wrong. So we were encouraged.
Polypharmacy, you mean a patient getting their medications from several pharmacies, you mean?
No, polypharmacy, psychiatric polypharmacy is a big problem, meaning a single patient is given 2-3 medications to treat the same thing. Like you typically see, we know very well in research that one antipsychotic is the same as any other antipsychotic. There is very little evidence to combine antipsychotics. But a patient with schizophrenia, you will see that they're on 2 antipsychotics. Why? You're only increasing their side effect profile. Or patients with depression, they're getting something for the morning, something for the evening. No, again, if you look at the research evidence, even in psychopharmacology, combining these medications, we know only increases side effect profile, but does not really create improvement.
So it creates another prescription, doctor. Right?
Yes, yes. But here, I mean, so this was my training there. And when I came here, I had to repeat my residency and I matched with the medical college. And I was shocked with the way that the training was, frankly. I mean, we were taught to my degree was called neuropsychiatry, and I was taught to do a physical exam, a neuro exam. If I had a doubt, anybody that came in with the first episode of psychosis, I would get a CT scan, I would get a full blood workup, and if needed, I would get an MRI of their brain. Because it was taught to me that we don't know what causes mental illness, but we know that there are certain medical neurological diseases that manifest as mental illness. So before we diagnose somebody with schizophrenia, we had to rule out that there was no physical, medical condition, neurological condition that was causing it. Like I remember a woman with I was my very first month in as a resident, brand new resident in India. This woman had come in with she was thought to be having schizophrenia. She actually had neurosyphilis, tertiary syphilis. And how did we get to know? Because we, based on her history, we not only did a CT scan MRI, but we also did a lumbar puncture. And I had to do lumbar puncture on her like every month or so, because we were giving her antibiotics, we were giving her intrathecal penicillin, and I had to kind of check how her cerebrospinal fluid was changing according to that. So the fact that mental illness can be caused by physical diseases was very much in my training there. And I kid you not, my very first day as a psychiatric resident at the medical college, everybody knew. I was already, I had graduated in 2002, and I was working as a psychiatrist in India before I had my own practice before coming here. So people here knew that I was a practicing psychiatrist. So on my very first day, the attending said, hey, you know psychiatry, why don't you demonstrate how to do a psychiatric evaluation? There was a medical student posted along with me. There was a first year psychiatry resident also who was posted along with me. And so I started to evaluate the patient. I did the interview part, and then I got up to examine. I took out my fundoscope. I took out my knee hammer to do a neuro exam. And I remember the attending. I know his name. I'm not going to get to take his name. But he was like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm completing my exam. And it's like, no, you can't touch the patient. So I said, why not? We are doctors. Who's going to rule out medical causes? How are you going to rule out medical causes, neurological causes? And he was like, oh, we have an internist for that. Like, why? Why do you need somebody else? You went to medical school. We are supposed to be doing all this.
It's part of your training.
Yes, it is part of our training. Why would you give that up? And he was like, no, you can't touch the patient. That's medical legal liability. So I had to put away my stethoscope. And of course, you know, I did not know that. I had invested close to, I want to say, Littmann's tethers. I bought a new Littmann's, which was $2,500, and another $1,000 for the fundoscope. So I'd spent a lot of money to buy these things because I was thinking prepared. These are, my tools of my trade. And I didn't have to use that. But that yearning to really connect the mind and body was very strong. So I chose to become geriatric psychiatry because there was more recognition that neurological diseases cause psychiatric illnesses. But alongside what was happening is I was having my own health issues. I was diagnosed with Hashimoto's. I was struggling with PCOS and infertility. And I was also developing symptoms of rheumatoid arthritis and gut issues. You know, I was having all these. And for everything, I was put on metformin. I had to take fertility treatments to get pregnant. And for rheumatoid, my doctor was saying, okay, you're having the symptoms, your antibodies are not positive, but there's a family history. My mom had rheumatoid arthritis. So we'll wait until the antibodies are positive, then we'll put you on immune suppressants.
Oh, okay.
I knew what the trajectory was. Yeah. And I was feeling so hopeless, so hopeless. But when I became pregnant with my children, I became very concerned about what I was eating. What I was, you know, feeding my children when they were born. So we went organic as much as we can, milk, eggs, meat, everything was organic. And I began to kind of question about the chemicals. And then through my own pregnancy, my mother and my mother-in-law, when they came here to help me, they brought so many herbs, like so many different herbs. And they had a particular process of taking care of me after my delivery. Like I wasn't supposed to eat any potatoes or nightshade vegetables for the first 4 to 6 weeks because they said that'll increase inflammation and increase your risk of infections. Then I was given a lot of green leafy vegetables, fish and lamb with fenugreek, a lot of fenugreek and garlic. This was like every day I had to start off I would eat a lot of lamb and garlic and to keep up with my milk supply. Then every night, my mother-in-law would soak up this herb. It's called vacha. I mean, of course, now I have a lot of vacha in my clinic here because we use it for nervous system diseases. But my mother-in-law said, hey, drink this. This will make your children develop speech and language very easily. It'll develop that part of their brain. So I didn't like it, but she would soak it up, those little herbs, and I would drink it in the morning. And so I did all of these things, never questioned where this came from. Shatavari was another herb that I used to take every day to keep up my milk supply. And a lot of ghee. Like I was made to eat so much ghee. Like ghee is, I actually had a primary care appointment and she was like, oh, your cholesterol is up. I said, yeah, I'm eating a lot of ghee because I'm nursing my baby. And she was like, oh, that's too much. You're eating too much. No, I was not eating too much. I mean, after I fixed myself, my PCOS. So all of this was happening. And then I questioned, okay, why am I doing this? One thing at home and at work, I'm just giving prescriptions, not even questioning what they ate, what they're eating, all of. So that question actually led me to explore. And I came across conference organizations like Integrative Holistic Medicine, Functional Medicine. And when I went for the Integrative Holistic Medicine conference in October of 2013, I was introduced to Ayurveda, and my mind was blown away. I thought Ayurveda was fake science, and here they're explaining how legitimate it is, how complete it is, how we can use Ayurvedic medicine to heal ourselves. So by 2014, my husband and I started our Ayurvedic clinic here. And I was still going through training. I was still working at a hospital. I didn't feel ready to transition. But between 2013 and 2016, I got my diploma in integrative and holistic medicine. I did a lot of education in functional medicine. And I also completed my training in Ayurvedic medicine. It was an online training. And then we hired an Ayurveda MD here. And then I began to kind of shadow her, see how she was doing. And of course, she fixed all my health issues. Like by 2014, I did my first Ayurvedic cleanse and Panchakarma and everything. And every year I kept up with it. Gradually, I changed my diet, my lifestyle, became more aware of everything. By 2018, my Hashimoto's was gone. Actually, within 1 year, my PCOS was completely reversed. Within 1 year. It was crazy. Like I had very severe PCOS. For people thinking, oh, maybe she had mild. No. From the age of 15 till the age of 37, I would get periods 2 times in a year, and I would bleed for 3 to 4 weeks when I would get. So I was severely hyperestrogenic, and I had that withdrawal bleeding it was really, really bad. But all modern medicine would give me was birth control pills to fix that. So in answer to your question, because I was able to heal myself, the next logical step for me to take that into my practice. That's how I became a holistic psychiatrist.
So if we say Ayurvedic medicine, are we talking about the mind, body, and spirit? Are we talking about changing what we eat? Are we talking about leaving medications to be not the priority, but the priority number 3 or 4? What is the core idea about Ayurvedic medicine? Because for me, when I think about Ayurvedic medicine, I think about Indian medicine. I think of herbs like adaptogens. So can you give us a little clarification of what you mean by Ayurvedic medicine?
Sure. So the basic concept in Ayurveda is that we all possess an innate intelligence that is forever looking for a state of balance or homeostasis, which is what health is. So disease is a state of imbalance, whereas health is a state of balance. The second big concept in Ayurveda is that we are all primarily energy beings having a material manifestation. And this is, it's actually based on quantum physics, because if you read quantum physics, that is what they say, that, you know, you look at matter. Yes, it is made up of molecules and atoms. But if you go more and more into the subatomic world, what we are seeing is that when you go into the subatomic world, we see that this matter exists as matter in one instant, but then it also exists as energy, waveform. So it's called the wave and particle duality. Wave is the energy, particle is the material manifestation. So we are constantly going between these wave, which is energy, and particle. We can map the electrical activity of the brain, which is nothing but energy. We can capture the electrical activity of the heart. We can capture the electrical activity of the skin. So there is a lot of evidence to understand that we are energy beings. And in Ayurvedic medicine, this energy is organized as 3 doshas, which govern all physiology. And the concept of imbalance is really applied to the doshas. So when these 3 core energies are out of balance, to who the person is, like we all are born with our own innate balance of these energies, which is called as prakriti or innate constitution. So it's not that my balance is not going to be the same as the balance for you. It's going to be what we are innately born with. And so when we deviate from this state of balance, then we manifest vikriti or imbalance, which is basically disease. So in treatment, we are bringing these energies into balance, because if the energies are balanced, then the material manifestation, so the cells, the tissues, the organs, and the whole body is going to be in a state of balance and will do its job as it is expected to. So the digestive system will digest food and absorb and eliminate waste. Our brain will make neurotransmitters and keep us happy and blissful. and our organ, liver, will do the detoxification. So everything will function as it should function when these three energies, they're called doshas, when they are in balance. Now, when it comes to medicine, to explain that, there is a very, very important proverb in Ayurveda, which goes like this. When diet is wrong, medicine is of no use. When diet is right, medicine is of no need.
Each is coming in with a diet that's really bad and a bag of medications. So you're going to be working on it's not going to be an easy job to detox the body from food and from medicine. But the nice thing is that you are already trained psychiatrist in conventional psychiatry.
Yes.
So what do you do with those patients then?
That is actually my typical patient. They're coming with a lot of medications. So the first step is always to find out where is the imbalance. So is it in all the three doshas or is it in one or two? So our evaluation is focused on finding out where is the imbalance. Then we come up with, number one, a diet and lifestyle healing program to fix that imbalance. Now, I continue the medications because when there is already so much of imbalance, the medications are suppressing the symptoms. They cause a lot of side effects, but the medications are suppressing the symptoms. So taking those medications away will cause withdrawal. It causes more pain to the patient. And my philosophy is avoid suffering as much as possible. So it doesn't work. So the first step is to use Ayurvedic herbs and the diet principles and detox treatments like our massage. So the Ayurvedic massage is not only, it's not just a spa service, it's actually to detox the body and to bring these energies into balance. So we do a lot of lymphatic drainage. So we do all these things in the beginning. And within 2 to 3 weeks, their physiology improves. And within, like, so in, you know, we routinely check our patients on a scale with, they're basically marking every symptom that they're having every time they come to see me. So I know that in 2 to 3 weeks, there is a 30 to 40% drop in the symptom score. So they could be coming, sometimes they're having headaches, insomnia, anxiety, diarrhea. Literally in 2 weeks' time, we see a 30 to 40% drop in the symptoms.
Wow, 2 to 3 weeks. If a patient is taking the medication, it takes at least 4 to 6 weeks to see any benefits.
Yes.
And then the patient would continue on that medication, or would they change it to, the doctor would they change it to something else because the first one did not work.
Exactly. That is just shooting in the dark.
Yeah.
The doctor is blindfolded. Not, see, when you don't know what, that's why I said the first thing that we do is figure out what are the root causes. That's the first step for us. And then we implement that. And so our diet is also customized to what the patients are, what their imbalances are. So by week 5 to 6, I see 50% drop in symptoms. And in the second month, if the patient is also interested in coming off of the medications, then we come up with a taper process.
Starting from the second month. And how long does it take for you to have the patient get off one of the medications that they have been taking for years? Let's say a depression patient taking fluoxetine and SSRI. For that patient, and you want to have the patient on a titration to stop fluoxetine, how long does it take to kind of have the patient stop this medication or replace it with Ayurvedic medicine or herbs?
So fluoxetine is actually a very good example because fluoxetine is one of the, you know, it has the longest half-life, almost 90 days, right? So with fluoxetine, my protocol, you know, I start off the taper process actually pretty rapidly because I know that the withdrawal is not going to happen for at least 2 months. But I very carefully monitor the patient. Now, the withdrawal is basically your system trying to adjust to the absence of this medication. So what I do is I actually still work with the physiology. It's like, you know, somebody withdrawing from alcohol. The withdrawal syndrome is simply your body not getting what it was used to. And so it is responding in a crisis state. So we provide other things that are going to manage that. So I have my own psychiatric withdrawal protocol. It consists of a bunch of different supplements that will provide the raw material for patients so the brain can start making the neurotransmitters even in the absence of these fluoxetine.
I'm glad that we are talking about certain medications because we see patients coming in and say, I stopped my medication that I've been taking for years and I have no symptoms. I'm fine. And then you see the same patient coming after a month or 2 months and saying, I feel really bad. I feel terrible. Dealing with a doctor who knows the medications, this can give another dimension of being actually able, especially for proactive patients who want to get better. You need someone to guide you in the process. You can't do it on your own.
I'll tell you my pet peeve, and I know you will understand this. I get so annoyed when I see extended release medications like Depakote given at nighttime, like Depakote ER, because with the extended release, what we are doing is that we are pushing off the Tmax, the peak levels are going to be 8 to 10 hours.
The peak level, which is the maximum of the medication in the bloodstream. So the maximum effect will happen after a certain time.
Yes, not only the maximum effect, but also the maximum side effects will happen at the peak levels, right?
Right.
And I haven't seen another psychiatrist here in the US who gives Depakote ER in the morning. And these patients, they take it at night. They're not getting the sedative effect of the Depakote. Depakote is sedating. They're not getting it because the Tmax is going, the peak levels are going to be 8 to 10 hours later. They're not sleeping at night. Then come around morning, now they're feeling the sedation, the tremors, and all of that in the morning, and then they sleep in the morning. As so many times, that's one pet peeve. I like, you know, when you're giving an extended release preparation, please be mindful as to when the peak levels are going to be, because that's when the effect is going to be, but that is also when the side effects are going to be. So every person that comes in on Depakote ER, I tell them, and they say, oh, I'm not sleeping. Give me something. I said, no, we are not giving you anything else. I'm just moving your Depakote from taking it at nighttime to taking it in the morning, or we make it an immediate release preparation.
Because the release takes longer to work. That makes a lot of sense. And we see this, especially with patients who are in a group home, taking several medications, and it just gets to be a game of placing the medication, what time of the day, without the regards to the side effect profile and the efficacy of the medication.
Absolutely. My second pet peeve, with regard to Cogentin or Benadryl, when these are used for, you know, side effects of antipsychotic medications. Now they give it, they give Cogentin, which is an anticholinergic medication, which interferes with sleep. It activates us. And it increases sympathetic transmission in the brain, activating us. That's why we use that for, you know, different kinds of Parkinson's and Alzheimer's disease and all that. And they give Cogentin to reduce side effects, which of extrapyramidal side effects associated with antipsychotics. They give one tablet in the morning, another one at night. When every physician, neurologist, and psychiatrist worth their grain of salt should know that all movement disorders disappear in sleep except for seizures. So even if you have extrapyramidal side effects, tremors, rigidity, everything goes away in sleep. You don't need to give Cogentin at night, which is then going to interfere with sleep.
Yes.
Then I say, take it at 8 o'clock. Then if needed, take it at 2 o'clock, 2 p.m.
Because you don't 8 a.m. That and night, 2 o'clock. I'm not unhealthy when you're sleeping.
Yeah.
Simple information. Cogentin is the benzotropin. I think any family member for any elderly patient, they're going to see it for patients who take it for the side effect of extrapyramidal symptoms.
Or Parkinson's.
Or Parkinson's. Even
I've seen Parkinson patients also given benztropin or trihexyphenidyl at bedtime. I'm like, why? I mean, I don't know. See, I mean, I get really pissed off. And then this is another thing that happened.
Doctor, that happens is that a patient come to the doctor, I am having more problems. they seek for a solution in the prescription pad. And that's
No. Umar, you're being very kind to physicians. I'm not, because we should know pharmacodynamics. We should know pharmacokinetics. We should know the side effect profile. We should know the peak values when they're happening. We should know all that. Otherwise, you have no business prescribing. This is a mistake on the part of because the physician, when they're prescribing Cogentin, they say twice daily, morning and night. No, you don't do that. That is very wrong.
You're not just trying to push patients from taking medications. You are actually managing their health, managing their symptoms, and helping them get better. And for that, you are using the tools that can be medications that they continue on, and you're trying to acclimate their bodies to accept different tools to get healthier and get better. Can you give us an example of a patient that you worked with and how you helped him or her?
Sure. Actually, you know, there are tons of patient testimonials on my YouTube page as well as on my website. I'll give you all that information. There are video testimonials. I encourage patients to listen to that, because I make my patients who have gone through this program with me to talk about their experience, because I want to demystify it. It's what I'm doing is very simple. It's very simple. It's logical. It's 2 + 2 always gives rise to 4. There's no mystery to this. So yeah. I do ask my patients to describe exactly how it was. So I can tell you, I mean, many different, like, you know, 6 months ago, in March, I started working with a young woman who came in with postpartum anxiety, severe anxiety, insomnia, depression, and she was also diagnosed as having psychosis. She was really highly anxious, and she was put on Seroquel because she was not sleeping. So she stopped breastfeeding, which was very, very hard on her. And even with high doses of Seroquel, she was not sleeping. In 2 months, we got her to sleep because we are addressing the core imbalances.
What is happening? What is actually causing you not to sleep?
Exactly. Yeah.
Not to get a medication which has a side effect to help you sleep.
Yeah. So, I mean, her anxiety is gone, complete resolution of insomnia. She's thriving and energy is back again. She's normal. Another young kid also started working in March. And this is 14-year-old. She came in with severe acne, no energy, a lot of fatigue and depression and anxiety. Now, I saw her this week, actually. These are all patients I've seen just this week. And I wanted her to do the detox. She's 14. She doesn't need to do the detox. It'll be helpful, but she's done with the treatment. Her skin is crystal clear, no acne at all. And she is having a very rigorous schedule. She's working as a lifeguard and she is doing cross country, no fatigue. Recovery from all of this is so quick and normal. She's sleeping through the night without any problems. And most importantly, she's not anxious. She's not depressed. And she's not on any medications.
So the body, the soul, the connection between them, and utilizing all the tools that you have been trained on in order to help them get better. When you talk about this younger patient, 14 years old, this is someone that maybe didn't have the best eating habits.
No, they were eating the standard American diet. Very nice family. Parents are extremely supportive, very loving, but they have a lot over there. I think they have 4 or 5 children. So the mom was getting overwhelmed. And, you know, it's easy to get processed food and they did not know better. You know, I don't find fault with people for doing that, because we live very busy lives and our culture tells us, oh, you don't have to cook here. Just pop this in the microwave and this is okay. Or take some cereal with milk in the morning and that is okay. But it's not. But the family has changed. And in fact, what the mother was saying is that the patient has an older brother who also had acne. Simply by changing the diet, his acne is also 50 to 70% better.
That's so wonderful. I'm glad that I see that you're always utilizing the gut-brain connection in your practice.
Completely.
And, can you tell us a bit more about the connection between the gut and the brain and how this is important for mental health and for better sleep, supporting anxiety problems?
Yes. So the idea that the gut is central to health comes from Ayurveda. But this has been shown to be true with research, even in functional medicine. In fact, in functional medicine, we have a saying, when in doubt, heal the gut first. So simply healing the gut lining is going to be the most important thing you can do. Now, with regard to the gut and the brain, there are we used to think that there is no connection, but that's not true. 90% of most neurotransmitters, especially serotonin, is actually made in the gut. Very little is actually made in the brain. Now, all these neurotransmitters, they are released into the blood and it reaches the brain, but there is also a direct pathway through the vagus nerve. So the 10th cranial nerve, which is the main parasympathetic nerve, which is all about rest, relaxation and digestion. That nerve, it starts in the spinal cord, in the medulla, 10th cranial nerve, and it goes all the way down to our gut and it controls the function of our gut. But this nerve also carries information, different kinds of neurotransmitters up the nerve back into the brain. But also, if a person is having gut dysbiosis, where their normal bacterial flora is overgrown with the bad actors, bad bacteria and fungus, these bad bacteria, especially gram-negative bacteria, they release a toxin called LPS, lipopolysaccharide. And that lipopolysaccharide actually travels up the vagus nerve into the brain, where it causes inflammation and is the number one factor for causing depression, anxiety, migraines, all of these conditions. Even dementia, too, has been associated with different forms of Pseudomonas infection in the mouth, and those toxins reaching the brain and causing degeneration of the brain, which then we call as Alzheimer's. That's so the microbiome. And also, you know, the gut is where we break down the food that we eat, absorb the nutrients, and eliminate the waste. Now, if there is any breakdown in this process, if you're not digesting, if you're not able to absorb your nutrients, and if you're not able to throw the waste out, so what can happen is you become nutritionally deficient and you're reabsorbing the toxins. So this is a big problem, especially I know your expertise is with hormonal balance. A lot of the women that have hyperestrogenic situations, they're actually reabsorbing estrogen in the enterohepatic circulation, which is basically the excess estrogen that should have been eliminated.
Xenobiotics.
Yeah, but xenobiotics too, they are reabsorbed into the liver, and then once it goes into the liver, it's going everywhere. So in fact,
so that's why the cleanse and the detoxification is a big part of what you're doing with patients,
yes,
in general.
Yeah, yes. So, you know,
the standard American diet is a sad diet to predispose all of these factors on, yes, most of the population, right?
Yes. I think for your listeners, the way to understand what I'm doing is it's really very simple. Number one, there is no chemical imbalance causing mental illness. And mental illness is actually a whole body illness. It's not just a problem in the brain. Those are the two things. And really, the three root causes that I've found is wrong diet, trauma or stress of life, and toxins. And these three things, so the xenobiotics, all these three things, the wrong diet, trauma and stress, and toxins, they first cause leaky gut. And the leaky gut then causes leaky liver, leaky brain, leaky heart. It causes everywhere, you know, there is endothelial lining damage. There is inflammation everywhere. It just spreads everywhere. And so in treatment, all I'm doing is removing the bad, providing the good. Removing the bad, providing the good. Just by doing that, the body is then able to, our innate intelligence kicks in.
The body
will heal itself.
Makes so.
Yeah, it doesn't take long.
Yeah. So how long does that, how long, like if a patient starts with you, a new patient that has been to different psychiatrists over the years, how long usually the patient takes in order to not just feel better, but to feel like like a dream coming true, like I am healed? How long does it take to have this feeling like I am well now and I have a new way of practicing the rest of my life? And after that, do they need to continue seeing you, or like they just annual checks?
So like I said, if you're younger and if you're not on any psychiatric medications, it literally takes, I mean, everyone, when irrespective of the duration of disease and all of that, of course, some people are going to be a little bit of an outlier. But majority of patients, and I'm talking about 85 to 90% of patients, will start to see improvements in 2 to 3 weeks. They'll see that we see, because we monitor their symptom severity. I see a 30 to 40% drop in symptoms in 2 to 3 weeks. By 5 to 6 weeks, we see 50% or more drop in symptoms. By month 4, when we do the detox, there's 90% improvement. And that's this 14-year-old, she doesn't want to do the detox, and I'm not forcing her. I mean, she's young. She's healed, basically. But most importantly, she has learned. So that's why I came up with the 6-month program. And 4 months, we see majority of the improvement, 90% improvement happens in the 4 months with everything that we do. In month 5 and 6, we focus on teaching people how to take care of themselves for the rest of their lives. Now, I'm always here. My team is here to support people if they need more support. But my goal is to give you the tools so that you don't need me. You don't need any other doctor. Stay out of the hospitals and clinics as much as possible. That's my sincere advice. But the only complications are when somebody is on psychiatric medication, because depending on how many medications they are on and what dosage and everything, I do it very slowly. So there's actually a patient by name Emily, whose video is on my YouTube channel. So I started working with her in January of this year. And she had been diagnosed with, she's only 36. She had been diagnosed with depression, anxiety, celiac disease, migraine headaches, and high blood pressure. And she was on Wellbutrin and Pristiq. And she had gained like over 70 pounds in weight. And her migraines were getting, and she was on propranolol. She was on Wellbutrin, Pristiq, propranolol, then a rescue medication for the migraine. So she has in 90% improvement in her symptoms by month 4. And then I started to taper. So she's off of the Wellbutrin now. And guess what? After she came off the Wellbutrin, her blood pressure went away. So, her blood pressure actually stabilized even before that. So migraines went away, celiac disease is healed. She's not having anxiety or depression. And we are now taking a month's break, and then she will start the taper of Pristiq.
So just final thoughts, Dr. Aruna, while you are describing this patient, I have like 10 patient names popping in my head that need help. We are going in the dilemma of seeing a psychiatrist with a trying a different new medication, not paid by the insurance. And finally, when they start to see results, that they cannot take this medication any longer because it's very expensive for them. So they fall into the trap of, what do I do now? The challenge that I see with your practice is that you're always not the first choice for patients, because they always seek what their insurance is going to pay for to support their health. So you get the patient after seeing one and two and sometimes more practitioners, right? So
the thing is, I don't take insurance, because the big reason for that is because I was asked to leave medical college because I was curing people. Let's face it. I did a presentation for them and they said I was anti-psychiatry and anti-men. No, I was talking about holistic approaches to psychiatry. So insurance doesn't support this kind of work. I've looked into taking insurance, and basically, I reserve 90 minutes for my intake evaluation. I spend 60 minutes with the patient, and the remaining time is for me to think and process and do my notes and come up with a plan. And they're also meeting with my Ayurveda MD while I'm doing the note. I mean, they meet with her. So people are getting a thorough evaluation. which insurance is going to compensate me for the time and effort and everything that I'm doing? They don't, because they don't want to. So people really need to figure out whether they want to go down the path of, and the side effects of these medications. No medication is meant to heal. They're only meant to suppress. And they all come with side effects. That's just the reality. And in my, you know, so I came up with the 6-month program. How much, I mean, what you tell me, you know, if you were having health issues, how much would you spend?
It's a health issue. Spend everything in order to feel better. And that's what you hear from patients after they spend years trying to find a solution.
Exactly. Yeah. So the really the problem is not with me that I don't take insurance. The problem is the system is set up to not help and not support people like me. I will take insurance if insurance will. I mean, I'll be very, very open here. It costs a little over $1,000 for 6 months, literally $1,100 per month, or no, maybe $1,200 per month. But we include consultations and a group session. So every patient is seeing me or my team member 3 times in a month. Plus, they're getting $1,650 of supplements included. Plus, they're getting the Ayurveda detox included. They're getting the whole treatment. And they get better.
They get better.
Why would you? I mean, if I had all these health issues and someone was saying, hey, give me 6 months of your time, do what I tell you, and this is how much it's going to cost you. But you know, you have to decide for yourself what your priorities are. So
paradigm shift of thinking about your mental health and mental well-being. But what is the how long does it take for a new patient to see you, doctor?
Actually, within 2 weeks, I'm able to kind of schedule.
And to schedule an appointment, they have to go to trinergyhealth.com. And
my phone number, it's 262-955-6600. And the website is actually psychiatry2.com. So the new paradigm, psychiatry 2.0. So it is psychiatry, psychiatry, the number 2.com. So that is,
This is a new website for scheduling with you.
Yes. Yeah. They can schedule a discovery call. If they are convinced that they can work with me, then they can just call my assistant, Erica. She's wonderful. And she'll book an appointment and we'll figure it out. So
patients can see you in person and if you visit just in person.
You know, I prefer at least the first appointment in person. But now, I mean, I have patients all over the country because, again, nobody is doing the way we do. And I have the whole setup where I ship supplements. We partner with a supplement warehousing company. So everything is streamlined. But anybody that is local, I definitely encourage them to come and see me in person because the video cannot compensate. It's not the same.
But if someone is outside of Wisconsin, they can always schedule a video conference, video call, Zoom call, and you arrange that as well. And you offer them the help they need. You send them the supplements they need, the medications that they are taking, they still can continue on. And you can also do that and help them and communicate with the health team that's already around the patients. So one of my last questions is that what's usually the age range for patients that you see, or do you see patients from any mental health, like, or are there preferables for you for a mental condition that you prefer to see?
I actually love working with all ages and all conditions. And I know in the social media marketing, they say pick a niche. I don't really see, because all disease, the root causes are the same. It's wrong diet, trauma, toxins. And really for me, I enjoy the connection that I develop. And one of my patients was actually telling me, this is my dopamine hit. This is how I get high when I see people get better. So I see from ages of, I mean, I see children with autism as well. And in my practice, I really see very, very sick people, severe autism, schizophrenia, bipolar. But majority of my patients are coming in with depression, anxiety, OCD, gut issues. These are the autoimmune diseases. We reverse them in my practice. So that's...
And ADD.
Yes, ADD as well. ADD, the best way to understand ADD is that, number one, it's a fake diagnosis. It's like saying you have fever. Your child has fever. Doesn't tell us anything beyond that. But what causes the symptoms of hyperactivity and distractibility is inflamed, toxic, irritable brain. That's what it is. From an Ayurvedic lens, it's mostly severe vata and pitta imbalance. And when we balance those things, again, remove the bad, provide the good, keep doing it until we find balance. That's all. It's as simple as that.
Dr. Aruna, I know for sure that your explanation of psychiatry and medicine is going to upset many conventional believers. But yes. This is revolutionary, and many patients need that. And we're always biased towards the patients. And we are very happy that you exist and your practice exists, because you don't just practice what you the functional medicine in the mental health, but you also believe in it, and you have done it from all directions.
Yes,
practicing, working with different patients. Thank you for this very rich podcast in ideas and the information. And we love to see you in the future. And we're going to put for the listeners the links to Dr. Aruna's website, and for scheduling and communicating with Dr. Aruna and her team in the notes with the podcast. And it's going to be shared on wiltopiarx.com website, and also in the platforms managed by Dr. Aruna.
Yes, I've given my information to you as well to make that easy. It has been my pleasure, Omar. And, you know, it's, and likewise, you're also doing, I mean, you're also a rebel in your field. Let's not forget that.
And support them and connect with practitioners who use, like, have the patient as number one, and they are trying to use the knowledge and what they are trained on to help the patients, which makes us feel very happy that we have practitioners, health practitioners, who think the same way.
Yes. Yeah. No, I mean, I think we need more people like you and me to change the health care system in the world, in this country, because US is very good at exporting its bad ideas to the rest of the world. So we need to start exporting good ideas from the US back to the rest of the world. So, and you definitely are a pioneer in your own way in what you're doing. And thank you for that. And thank you for being part of this community. And I really enjoyed my conversation with you. Thank you for giving me space today.
Appreciate it. Thank you so much. And sorry for the disturbance that happened through the conversation. I'll try to fix it.
It happens. As long as, you know, I feel I was able to communicate my message, and you did a great job with your questions, and you were keeping me on target. So that was very good. As long as our listeners are finding it useful, I think our job is done.
I think so. I have some patients that I will refer to you after this conversation, because you just lighten some light bulbs in my head. But thank you for. I know you're gonna see them soon, so I want to give you time to prepare. So thank you so much for your time, Doctor. Have a wonderful rest of the day.
You too. Bye bye.
Bye bye.